welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August the 17th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have a special show for you this evening. It's a tribute show dedicated to honoring the life of military veteran Rick Riscorla, who is famous not only for his service in the Vietnam War, but also for saving the lives of about 2,700 people at the World Trade Center on September the 11th, 2001, before losing his life in the collapse of the South Tower while trying to rescue even more people. Now, before going to that tribute to Rick Riscorla, let's first go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How's it going tonight?
Hey, David, and good evening, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well with the current COVID-19 situation. Seems to be getting worse rather than better, especially in our universities that are opening up. Just read that University of North Carolina apparently is shutting down and going virtual. Anyway, we've got a great show tonight. I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, your questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. I want to remind everybody that this is the Veterans News Hour, so veterans, this is your show. If you want to talk about some of your concerns, please give us a call. That number again is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. We're going to start our tribute this evening to Rick Riscorla with a nine-minute tape made by the American Veterans Center and the World War II Veterans Committee, whose mission is to preserve and promote the legacy and experiences of America's veterans and active duty personnel going back to World War II but up through today. It's a nonprofit educational organization. It's called the American Veterans Center and World War II Veterans Committee. It's funded solely through generous contributions from people like you, and all contributions are tax deductible. Their website is easy to remember. It's AmericanVeteransCenter.org. And we encourage all our listeners to visit their website and to donate, if possible, to support their outstanding work. Again, their website is AmericanVeteransCenter.org. Now, let's hear about Rick Riscorla, to whom we've dedicated this show. Doug, if you'll please roll the tape.
After midnight, November 16th, 1965. Landing Zone X-Ray, Yadrang Valley, South Vietnam. The last 36 hours had seen desperate fighting in the first battle between American and NVA forces in the Vietnam War. Nerves were on edge as soldiers took cover, awaiting a nighttime attack. Then, through the silent darkness, the men heard a baritone voice begin to sing. It was the voice of the platoon's commander, 2nd Lieutenant Rick Riscorla. Rick was among the few who had seen action before. Born in England at the outbreak of World War II, he idolized the American troops stationed there in preparation for D-Day. As a teen, he joined the British paratroopers at age 24 and still in search of adventure. He moved to the United States and joined the Army. Through the darkness, Riscorla risked sniper fire to scout the battlefield. All the while, he sang. The booming baritone calmed the men's nerves and steeled their courage. Rick Riscorla would be decorated with the Silver Star and Purple Heart for actions in Vietnam. His comrades remembered him as a battlefield legend, regaling each other with stories of his heroics. But as years passed, Riscorla distanced himself from his heroic past. Now an American citizen, he had seen enough battle. Enough death. Though his days as a soldier were over, decades later, Rick Riscorla would become a hero once more on one of the darkest days in American history. On a cool, late summer morning, now head of security for Morgan Stanley, Rescorla readied himself for work and said goodbye to his wife. He grabbed the train to New York City, heading to his office in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. The date was September 11th, 2001. 8:46 a.m. An explosion rocked the South Tower as if New York was hit by an earthquake. Employees looked out to a sea of paper floating past the windows, then up to find the North Tower in flames. An announcement from building management came over the speakers. The building is secure. Please remain at your desks. From his office on the 44th floor, Rick Rescorla refused to listen. 8 years prior, he was on duty when terrorists detonated a bomb in the building's parking garage. He led the evacuation that day, the last man out of the building. Upon reports that a plane had hit the North Tower, Rick Rescorla grabbed a bullhorn and began the evacuation of 2,700 Morgan Stanley employees from the South Tower. 9:07 a.m. A massive blast shook the South Tower, knocking out the lights. On the 44th floor, employees struggled to keep balance as the building swayed. Many rushed to one stairwell, only to find it filled with smoke. Before panic could set in, Rescorla's voice came through the bullhorn. Stay calm. Move toward the other stairwell. Watch out for each other. Today is a day to be proud to be an American, he declared. Tomorrow, the whole world will be talking about you. Then, in his booming baritone, he began to sing. Just as in Vietnam, the old British military tunes calmed nerves and steeled courage. In a spare moment, he pulled out his phone and called his wife. I don't want you to cry, he said. I have to evacuate my people. If something happens to me, I want you to know that you made my life. 2,700 Morgan Stanley employees worked in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. All but six survived. A miracle on the darkest of days, made possible by a long-ago hero called to action one last time.
Ladies and gentlemen, witnesses to the valor of Rick Rescorla, please welcome Joseph Galloway, co-author of We Were Soldiers Once and Young, who witnessed Rescorla's heroism in Vietnam, joining our Morgan Stanley employees who were in the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, and witnessed Rescorla's actions, William Von Skoyek and Bill McMahon.
Galloway, you were a witness to American valor at the Battle of I Drang, which you and Hal Moore obviously wrote a landmark book, and a movie was made about it as well. But what I'd like, if you wouldn't mind, is if you could tell us about Rescorla, the soldier.
Rick came off that helicopter shaking his rifle, and he looked at this frightened battalion of survivors of a terrible massacre. And he shook that rifle and he said, they've got us surrounded. Good, good, good. We can attack in every direction. That was Rick Rescorla. That's the one I saw. That's the one I love.
Van Skoyek, you were there and you witnessed Rescorla's actions on September 11th. Tell us what you and your fellow Morgan Stanley employees saw, if you would, please.
Thanks to what Rick had done and the training he had given us, we had the ability to come out. So we had got off on the 8th floor observatory deck, began to come down, and I can hear this loud booming voice, which I had heard in several training sessions before, which I knew that to be him. And he was instructing people what to do. Okay, he was singing. And I remember hearing this and thinking, I'm going down an escalator, and I'm pretty sure he's going back up. And that's the type of person he was. So the impact he made on lives that I saw is immeasurable. Without his actions, without his valor, without his courage and leadership, so many more of us would have perished that day. I'm convinced of that. And thanks to him, because of the training that he gave me, I remember checking off the box for the last person that I had been accountable for and getting to that number of 276 and just thanking God, saying, I know I didn't have anybody who was lost here. I was entrusted with this class, and they came out. And I'm firmly convinced that never would have happened without Rick Rescorla and the training he gave us.
Bill McMahon, how should we remember Rick Rescorla?
When that plane hit, and I was on the 44th floor when it actually hit, I'd come down from the 69th, and I remember the announcement, and then I remember hearing Rick's voice saying, everything's going to be okay. Just move to a stairwell. Everything's going to be fine. And he started singing. And everybody just knew, if Rick said it was going to be fine, it's going to be fine. And we walked out of that building that day, 2,700 of us, and we're alive today to talk about it. What Rick did was Rick went back into the building because he wanted to sweep it one more time to make sure that nobody was left behind. And that, to me, is who that person is. The person who was willing to give his life for all of us. And that's how, at least I will always remember the man.
A true hero. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, a few of the witnesses to the valor of Colonel Rick Rescorla.
I'd like to thank the American Veterans Center and World War II Veterans Committee for creating that tape in commemoration and honor of Rick Rescorla, who died on September the 11th in the collapse of the South Tower of the World Trade Center when he was returning to the building again to ensure that as many people could get out as possible. If you'd like to learn more about that organization, American Veterans Center, and perhaps contribute to support their outstanding work that is designed to promote and preserve the legacy and experiences of American veterans, their website, again, is AmericanVeteransCenter.org, AmericanVeteransCenter.org. And now, Richard Hurley and I would like to highlight more, because there's really even more to the story of Rick Rescorla's life, his military service, and his service on 9/11 that we'd like to talk about. And again, our purpose on tonight's edition of the Veterans News Hour is to salute the service and the sacrifice of Rick Rescorla. And I think America needs more heroes today than it has. And Rick Rescorla, although he's no longer with us, certainly is a great example people can emulate. He was always there when his country needed him, even though he served with great valor and courage in Vietnam. Even before that war became very unpopular, he later left the service and furthered his education and then dedicated his life to the security of other people, literally saving thousands of lives. So the information that we're going to share about Rick Rescorla's life, I'd like to give credit to the website MilitaryHallOfHonor.com for compiling this information from many sources, and for which we are using it for the education of our listeners here on the Veterans News Hour to honor Rick's life. We'd like to take this moment also to encourage our listeners to support the work of that fine organization to honor military veterans. So please see their website, which is MilitaryHallOfHonor.com. Now, Rick Rescorla, his formal name was Cyril Richard Rescorla. He was born 27th of May of 1939 in seaport of Hale on the coast of Cornwall in Great Britain. In 1943, as you know, World War II was underway. His hometown of Hale served as the headquarters for some American units, 175th Infantry Regiment of the U.S. 29th Infantry Division, which largely was composed of American soldiers from the states of Maryland and Virginia, who were preparing for the D-Day invasion of Europe. Now, young Rick Riscorla idolized these American soldiers and vowed to become a soldier someday because of them. Rick Riscorla was the only child of a single mom, but at the time he didn't even know it. He thought he had a regular working-class family. It was only years later that he learned that his, quote, parents were actually his grandparents and that his supposed sister and brother were really his mother and uncle. Even after learning the truth, he continued to call his mother Sis until the day he died. His mother actually outlived him. And Rick Riscorla, unfortunately, never had a chance to meet his father. Rick Riscorla was a sports natural from youth. He set a school record in the shot put and was an avid boxer. When a professional boxing match was scheduled between a British boxer and American heavyweight contender named Tammy Moriello, his British friends backed the Englishman. But Riscorla stated, "I'm for Tammy," for the American. And after Moriello won the fight, everyone in Hale began calling Riscorla the nickname Tammy. According to his friend Mervyn Sullivan, he was also a very talented and highly competitive rugby player. And in fact, Mervyn Sullivan has a scar on his forehead where Rick Riscorla once kicked him in the head while chasing a rugby ball. And that's amazing since they were on the same team. Now, Rick Hurley, I know you have more you can share with us about Rick Riscorla's military service.
Yeah, he enlisted in the British Army in 1957 because he hated his given name, Cyril. He began using the name Rick. He trained as a paratrooper with the Parachute Regiment and then served with an intelligence unit in war-torn Cyprus during the Cypriot insurgency. He then served as a paramilitary police inspector in the Northern Rhodesia Police, now Zimbabwe Police Service. After returning to civilian life in London, he joined the Metropolitan Police Service and became a detective at Scotland Yard. However, he soon became bored with the job and paperwork and moved to the United States, where he lived at a YMCA in Brooklyn until he was able to enlist in the Army. Rick enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1963 and underwent basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey. While in basic training, he met Dan Hill, who would become his best friend. Rick and Dan were the only two recruits in basic with combat experience. The situation was the same when they attended officer candidate school at Fort Benning, Georgia. They also took airborne training. After graduating from OCS and being commissioned as a second lieutenant in April 1965, Riscorla was assigned as a platoon leader in Bravo Company, 2nd Battalion, 7th Cavalry Regiment, 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile. Like many other units, 2nd Battalion, 7th Cavalry Regiment was sent to Vietnam in the fall of 1965, a time when the Vietnam War was beginning to seriously escalate. All right, David, give us some more information.
Yeah, let's talk about Rick Riscorla's service in Vietnam and the Battle of Ai Trang. In a remote part of the central highlands of South Vietnam lay the hills of the Ai Trang Valley, an area so named because of the Trang River, which runs through the valley and basically was the focal point for this battle. On the 14th of November of 1965, elements of the 1st and 2nd Battalions of the 7th Cavalry Regiment and the 5th Cavalry Regiment began being dropped by helicopter into the valley. The first night, American troops were encircled at a small landing zone they called X-Ray, and one company was virtually wiped out in a hellish firefight. As it turned out, they were outnumbered about 10 to 1 by North Vietnamese Army troops who also controlled the higher ground nearby on Mountain Ridge. Now, the next day, November 15th, 1965, Rick Riscorla's company was ordered to replace the wiped-out company on the perimeter at the foot of the Chupong Mountain Ridge. In a later letter to General Hal Moore and Joe Galloway, Riscorla recalled that when he arrived, after a U.S. fighter jet had mistakenly dropped napalm on his men, he found corpses scattered everywhere from the night before, including an American with his hands still clenched around a North Vietnamese soldier's throat. the commander, Myron Diederich, asked him, "Are your men up to this? Do you feel they can hold?" Riscorla replied, "If they break through us, sir, you'll be the first to know." Rick Riscorla risked sniper fire that night to study the terrain from the enemy viewpoint. He ordered his men to dig new foxholes 50 yards back, lay booby traps, and reposition their machine guns and artillery. After midnight, he sang a slow Cornish mining tune called "Going Up Camber Hill, Coming Down." A fellow soldier remembers Riscorla stopping by his foxhole to reset his bayonet and critique his fields of fire, joking as if they were preparing to play paintball. "What a command presence," recalled his fellow soldier. "We all thought we were going to die that night, and Riscorla gave us our courage back. I figured if he's walking around singing, the least I can do is stop trembling." Rick Riscorla was indeed a very rare second lieutenant.
The next morning, Bravo Company beat back four assaults, cutting down about 200 enemy soldiers while sustaining only a few injuries. "The quietness settled over the field," Riscorla wrote later. "We put more rounds into the clumps of bodies nearest our holes, making sure. 40 yards away, a young North Vietnamese soldier popped up from behind a tree. He started his limping run back the way he had come. I fired two rounds," he crumpled. "I chewed the line out for Thayer to fire quickly." Although it sounds callous, Riscorla had a vicious job to do. Minutes later, he saved several of his men by dropping a grenade on an enemy machine gunner. When his company was airlifted back to base, Riscorla still had the gunner's brain matter on his fatigue. "The stench of the dead would stay with me for the years after the battle," he wrote. "Below us is the pockmarked earth was dotted with enemy dead. The grenadier next to me threw up on my lap. He was like many, a man who had fought bravely even though he had no stomach for the bloodletting." The next day, while Bravo Company rested, the rest of 2nd Battalion marched into a vicious ambush near a landing zone called Albany. Bravo was sent back to the rescue. "You know the battalion is in the..." Didn't say what was on his mind there. Riscorla told his men, "We've been selected to jump into that you-know-what and pull them out." Once again, Riscorla sprinted into a ragged perimeter. After a bone-rattling 10-foot jump from a UE under fire and immediately lifted the spirits of weary soldiers who thought they were done. "My God, it was like Little Bighorn," recalls Pat Payne, reconnaissance platoon leader. "We were all cowering in the bottom of our foxholes expecting to get overrun. Riscorla gave us courage to face the coming dawn. He looked me in the eye and said, 'When the sun comes up, we're going to kick some ass.'" Riscorla was right. 2nd Battalion fought its way out of Albany. Riscorla left the field with morale-boosting trophy of war, a battered French Army bugle that the North Vietnamese had once used single troops. It became a talisman for his entire division.
As the Battle of Ai Trang took place, as I said, between November 14th and November 18th, 1965, it was the first major battle between the United States Army and the North Vietnamese Army. The area in which the battle took place would become known as the Valley of Death. A total of 305 Americans died in the Battle of Ai Trang, more than in the entire Persian Gulf War in 1991. The North Vietnamese death toll is estimated to be over 3,500. But the worst news of all was that the leaders on each side decided after the battle that they would be able to outlast the other in a war of attrition. The bloody battle was described in the book and movie called We Were Soldiers Once and Young, co-authored by Lieutenant General Hal Moore, U.S. Army retired, and war correspondent Joseph Galloway. Rick Riscorla is the gaunt, unshaven soldier pictured on the book's jacket cover, carrying his M16 rifle with bayonet fixed. Now keep in mind, this book came out in about 1992. Lieutenant General Hal Moore described him as, quote, "the best platoon leader I ever saw. What a unique man." Riscorla's men nicknamed him Hardcore for his bravery in battle and revered him for his good humor and his compassion towards his men. Rick Riscorla is also mentioned in the book called Baptism by Larry Gwynn, who also fought at I Drang. The 14th chapter of that book is called Rescorla's Game, mm-hmm. and describes him as the Cornish Hawk. Gwynn described him as a charming raconteur with a crazed, irreverent twinkle, but also a ruthless killer with a cold, steely glint that could sear through you like the icy stare of death in the bush.
The survivors of the 7th Cavalry still tell awestruck stories about Rescorla, like the time he stumbled into a hooch full of enemy soldiers on a reconnaissance patrol in Bon San. "Oh, pardon me," he said before firing a few rounds and racing away. "Oh, come on, pardon me," repeats Dennis Steele, who followed Rescorla that day in April of 1966, like he had walked into a ladies' tea party. Another story involves the time a deranged private pulled a .45 caliber pistol on an officer while Rescorla was nearby sharpening his bowie knife. "Rick just walked right between him and said, 'Put down the gun,'" recalls Bill Lund, who served with Rescorla in Vietnam. "And the guy did. Then Rick went back to sharpening his knife. He was flat out the bravest man any of us ever knew." Larry Froelich, an OCS classmate, remembers most of us were in awe of Rick. It came as no surprise when the stories began to trickle back from Vietnam about his exploits in the field. Rescorla served one tour in Vietnam. He hated the way the Washington politicians were running things. Their kill ratios, no fire zones, an half-baked commitment to victory. He believed they were underestimating the enemy's resolve by mistaking fervent nationalism for Soviet-style communism and that they were piling up body bags in a losing cause. He liked to say the higher-ups saw things through the rosy red hood. "When I heard that Rick had quit the war, I felt in my heart this was the wrong war for us," Froelich recalls. "I never thought he'd walk away from a noble pursuit."
Rick Rescorla's military awards and decorations included many. The Silver Star Medal, the Bronze Star Medal with Valor, Bronze Star Medal for Merit, the Purple Heart, Meritorious Service Medal, the Air Medal, the Presidential Unit Citation, Parachutist Badge, Combat Infantry Badge, British Parachutist Badge, and many, many more. Rick Rescorla finished his Army's tour back at Fort Benning and then received a U.S. citizenship there as well. He stayed in the Army Reserve, where he trained officers for the Oklahoma National Guard and took another job training security guards in hand-to-hand combat. But although he remained in the Army Reserve for years, the pure macho stage of his life was over. He retired from the Army Reserve as a colonel.
Vietnam was always in the background. He told his daughter, Kim, that he wasn't the same man who used to kill 20 people before breakfast. He felt uneasy at reunions, complaining in an email to Schuchart about their strange mixture of sentimentality, camaraderie, hucksterism, and revisionist history. He once wrote that men who died in Vietnam were as valid as any American hero in any war this country has ever fought. And he often visited the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. But he could not relate to veterans who still greeted him with, "Welcome home, brother," and who never got over their bitter homecomings.
Now, after leaving active duty, although he stayed in the reserves, when he returned to the United States in 1968, Rick Rescorla began his studies in literature at the University of Oklahoma on the GI Bill. After combat, he was back home, and his life changed. He hung around bookstores and coffee shops. He read up on American Indians in the Wild West, and he studied creative writing. He earned bachelor's and master's degrees in literature and then began law school. Fred McBee, a fellow student, was quoted as saying, "I'm sure everyone's talking about Rick, the Celtic warrior, Rick the hero, but he also had deep intelligence. He'd laid Shakespeare on you." He'd quote Prowse. In 1982, after law school, Rick Rescorla became a professor of criminal justice at the University of South Carolina. But academia was not his calling. As his friend Dan Hill asked, "Can you imagine Rescorla sitting around with the damn pipe in his mouth?" The money wasn't great either, so Rick Rescorla shifted into corporate security, first at the Bank Administration Institute, then at a Chicago bank. In 1985, he moved to New Jersey to be the director of security for the Wall Street brokerage firm Dean Witter, which later merged with the investment bank Morgan Stanley. He brought a military regiment to the job, frequently calling his guards at night to make sure they were at their posts and constantly analyzing new security threats.
During the Gulf War, Hill says, Viscorla concluded that the main threat at the World Trade Center was a truck bomb attack on the pillars of the basement parking garage. We walked the garage together, and that was obviously the soft spot, says Hill, who had been hired by Viscorla as a consultant. He warned Port Authority, but they said it was none of his business. In 1993, a terrorist truck bombed in that very garage created pandemonium. Although legend has it that Rick dropped his pants to get the crowd's attention, that Viscorla's story isn't quite true. He only jumped on a desk in the middle of the firm and threatened to drop his pants if his people didn't chill out and listen. In the stunned silence that followed, he launched an orderly evacuation, refusing to leave until the entire tower was empty. Viscorla and Dan Hill reasoned that the World Trade Center was still a target for terrorists, and the next attack could be a plane crashing into one of the towers. Rick expected a cargo plane, possibly loaded with chemical or biological weapons. He recommended to his superiors at Morgan Stanley that the company leave Manhattan. Office space and labor costs were lower in New Jersey, and the firm's employees and equipment would be safer in a proposed four-story building. However, this recommendation was not followed, as the company's lease at the World Trade Center did not terminate until 2006. At Viscorla's insistence, all employees, including senior executives, then practiced emergency evacuations every 3 months, walking down stairways two abreast.
And that brings us to September the 11th, 2001. Rick Viscorla was supposed to be on vacation that day. His wife, Susan's daughter, Alexandra, was getting married the next week in a 10th century Tuscan castle, and they had planned to go abroad early. But his deputy, Ihab Dana, wanted to visit Lebanon, so Viscorla delayed his own vacation and covered his shift. If it hadn't been for me there, Dana said, Rick was like a father to me. Viscorla was also scheduled to attend a lunchtime meeting to discuss the lawsuit Morgan Stanley was filing against the Port Authority about the security lapses that led to the 1993 attack. At 8:15 a.m. on September the 11th, Rick called his wife Susan from his corner office on the 44th floor. Susan said later, he told me that he loved me. He said he didn't need the movies. He had me. At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 struck the World Trade Center Tower 1, which was the North Tower. Rick Viscorla, following his evacuation plans, ignored the Billings officials' advice to stay put, and he began the orderly evacuation of Morgan Stanley's 2,700 employees on 20 floors of World Trade Center 2 and 1,000 employees in World Trade Center 5. Viscorla reminded everyone to, be proud to be an American. Everyone will be talking about you tomorrow. And he sang God Bless America and other military and corner songs over his bullhorn to help evacuees stay calm as they left the building. Viscorla had most of Morgan Stanley's 2,700 employees as well as people working on other floors of the South Tower safely out of the buildings by the time United Airlines Flight 175 hit the South Tower at 9:03 a.m. After leading many of his fellow employees to safety, Viscorla returned to the building to rescue still others inside. When one of his colleagues told him that he too had to evacuate, Viscorla replied, as soon as I make sure everyone else is out. Susan Viscorla watched the United Airlines jet carve through her husband's tower, and she dissolved in tears. After a while, her phone rang. It was Rick. I don't want you to cry, he said. I have to evacuate my people now. She kept sobbing. He said, if something happens to me, I want you to know you made my life. And then the phone went dead. According to Stephen Newhouse, chairman of Morgan Stanley International, Viscorla was seen as high as the 72nd floor, still evacuating people, clearing the floors, and working his way down. He was last seen heading up the stairs of the 10th floor of the collapsing World Trade Center South Tower. His remains were never recovered. As a result of his actions, nearly all of Morgan Stanley's employees survived. Rick, over to you.
Rick married Elizabeth, a special needs teacher, in 1972. She once found his medals hidden in a round tin in their attic. He always said, the war was part of my life. It's not my life, she says. In 1994, Rick was diagnosed with prostate cancer and underwent surgery to remove his prostate. Initially, the prognosis was positive, but by 1998, the cancer had spread to his bone marrow. After his divorce from Elizabeth, Viscorla met Susan Greer in 1998 in the townhouse complex where he lived. Susan was an assistant to a dean at Fairleigh Dickinson University. When Viscorla's cancer went back into remission, he credited Susan, who had introduced him to a specialist in herbal medicine. They married on February the 20th, 1999, at Castillo de San Marcos in St. Augustine, because it reminded him of his childhood home at the coast of Cornwall. Rick left behind a widow, Susan Viscorla, two children, Kim and Trevor, and three stepchildren. His mother died in 2002. Viscorla's daughter, Kim, was in law school at Seton Hall University in Newark, New Jersey on 9/11. She and her brother, Trevor, were living with their mom, Viscorla's first wife, Betsy, in Morristown, New Jersey, when the attacks occurred. They were not surprised that he died in the line of duty, Trevor says. I knew he would be the last person out because it was his command. As long as there were people in there, he would try to get them out. It was part of who my father was. He stayed to help evacuate the building in 1993 and would not have done anything different that day, Kim says. This was Viscorla's last email to Kim at law school, dated September the 10th. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, dream, then scheme. This country will be coming out of its slump about 2 years from now. It's going to be a time for legal eagles of all kinds to leave their rocky promontories, spread their wings, and do what eagles tend to do.
Now, it's been really our privilege to pay tribute to the memory of Rick Viscorla, his heroism, both as an Army veteran when his country needed him in wartime, as well as to his heroism and good judgment and preparation in peacetime. Since 2001, there have been many memorials, books, films, et cetera, to his memory. And for those of you interested in learning more about the life of Rick Viscorla, there are certainly many that are available through the website. But it applies not just in the United States, but even reaching back to his hometown in Hale, Cornwall, Great Britain, where they created a memorial stone to commemorate his life. There was also a Rick C. Viscorla Memorial Foundation created. Author James B. Stewart wrote a biography of Rick Viscorla called The Heart of a Soldier, which was described by Time magazine as the best nonfiction book of 2002. The book is the subject of an opera by Christopher Theophanidis with the libretto by Donna Di Novelli, starring Thompson Hampson as Viscorla and featuring William Burton. It was premiered at the San Francisco Opera on the 10th of September 2011. Rick Viscorla was the subject of a 2005 documentary entitled The Man Who Predicted 9/11. The film was shown on Channel 4 in the United Kingdom and the History Channel in the United States. Just as a side note, I would point out, you know, think about how many U.S. government leaders after 9/11 were trying to sell the lame spin that there was no way to have predicted 9/11 attacks. Well, it's pure hogwash, as we all know. And Rick Viscorla is a living example of someone whose job in security involved logical risk analysis. He had his Army friend come and do a risk assessment even before the 1993 attack of the World Trade Center, and they predicted the vulnerability and the risk created by a truck bomb, which 3 years later actually did occur. He predicted the use of airplanes to attack the World Trade Center, and he tried to warn his employers. He was disregarded. So he did the best he could do. Instead of quitting or running or throwing up his hands, he did the best thing he could do, which was prepare his people, just like he prepared his soldiers over in Vietnam. He prepared, and he prepared them to do what? To evacuate, which saved their lives in 2011. Now, Rick Viscorla has been honored in many other ways. He was honored with the White Cross Award from his native Cornwall in 2003. He was the subject of Amanda Ripley's 2008 book, The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes and Why, which profiles Rick Viscorla in that book. In 2006, Fort Benning, Georgia, unveiled a statue of Rick Riscorla. In 2009, he was inducted into the Oklahoma Military Hall of Fame. There was a forwarding base. There's a forwarding operating base in Farah Province, Afghanistan, named after him. It was Forward Operating Base Riscorla. Raptor Preserve, a memorial site in Morris County, New Jersey, contains a memorial plaque for Richard C. Riscorla. He once told his wife, Susan, that if she wanted a memorial for him, he'd be okay with a plaque at a nearby bird sanctuary called the Raptors. It'd go on the American Eagle case. He was a big fan of the American Eagle and what it symbolized. In March of 2009, he was posthumously awarded the Above and Beyond Citizen Medal, the most prestigious civilian award in America. Every year on National Medal of Honor Day, three U.S. citizens are awarded the Above and Beyond Citizen Honor. They received this award from a group of Americans whose actions have defined the word courage of the fewer than 1,000 living members of the Congressional Medal of Honor Society. On that day, March 25th of 2009, his children, Kim and Trevor, accepted this honor at the ceremony held in the shadow of the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington Cemetery. And then this past November 2019, Rick Riscorla was posthumously awarded the Presidential Citizens Medal at a ceremony at the White House. It's a medal reserved for those who perform exemplary deeds or acts of service for the nation and its citizens. So there's a lot to memorialize Rick Riscorla, and here on the Veterans News Hour, we thought it would be a nice thing to do to remember his service with the memorial of September 11th just coming up in a few weeks. So before we go into some of our regular events for our show, for the Veterans News Hour, let me just remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, as Richard Hurley said at the start of the hour. Anyone wanting to call in to comment here at the Veterans News Hour, our toll-free nationwide call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, slowly, it's 1-888-627-6008. Again, nationwide call-in toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. I'd like to make one more reminder before turning things over to Richard Hurley again. I'd like to thank again the American Veterans Center, whose website is AmericanVeteransCenter.org, for creating the tape we heard at the beginning of the show. It's a nonprofit educational organization, and its mission is to preserve and promote the legacy and experiences of America's veterans. And they rely on donations from people like you, so if you're able to, check out their website, AmericanVeteransCenter.org, and you can make a donation, which is tax-deductible. I'd also invite you to check out the website of MilitaryHallOfHonor.com, which is an outstanding website whose purpose is to document and honor the service of military veterans. That's MilitaryHallOfHonor.com. So if you can, check out those websites. I know... let's go over to Richard Hurley. Rick, get your thoughts and impressions.
Well, first, David, that's a great story that you put together there, and thank you for doing the research. I was not familiar with the story about Mr. Riscorla, but I was living in New Jersey at the time of 9/11, and also during the 1993 bombing as well, and remember it vividly. One of the things that I was struck by that story was, and I heard so many of these stories, for so many people who may have gotten injured or lost their lives, and they ended up at the World Trade Center because of maybe an accident, a change of schedules, or they survived because of some miraculous scheduling. For instance, I have a cousin who, she was an interpreter, and she used to work in the Trade Center as a Chinese interpreter. She never was late. She was so punctual, and she lived in Jersey City. And the first time she was ever late was on the day of 9/11.
Wow.
And by the time she got to Journal Square in Jersey City, the first plane had entered the tower. and the PATH train, which is the local subway system that takes you in and out of New York from New Jersey, was no longer running. And I remember her telling the story that she was running to Journal Square so she would make the PATH so she wouldn't be late. And then when she got there, she found out what had happened. Otherwise, who knows, she may have been caught in the tower or even in the melee afterwards, as everyone can remember those scenes when the towers came crumbling down.
Right.
And I, as I told you before we went on the air, I lost five friends. Two were very close to me, Tom Glasser and John Farrell. Tom and I went to go back as far as third grade, and he was working for Chandler Fitzgerald. So it was horrific. It was absolutely horrific. And to hear a positive story like Rescorla and how he escorted 2,700 people out of that building, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, really, it's just amazing. What a credit to the man, his family. Another thing I didn't know is he had a daughter that went to Seton Hall Law School, and that's where I graduated from.
So. Oh, okay.
It's a great law school.
Obviously, yeah.
It's a great law school.
It's a credit to Rick Rescorla too that he had the foresight, and he used his military experience to prepare. And when he was faced with obstacles, which included people higher up in the organization, basically, or in the government, the Port Authority, telling him it's not your place to worry about those risks, like of the bombings. It's not your place to worry about planes crashing into the World Trade Center. Rather than just accept it and ignore it, he still did the best that he could. And I was thinking back, I was reflecting on his service in Vietnam. And if you were listening to, as we were describing his service, and as the short audio tape at the beginning of the show described it, Rick had combat experience in the British military before he came to the United States in 63. So he wasn't your typical second lieutenant. He was a combat-hardened soldier already at that point. And he had a bravery to him, and he had just a fearlessness and level-headedness that got him through the bad situations that he was put into. You know, Rick Rescorla, he didn't make the decision to send troops to Vietnam. He didn't make the decision to send troops into that really unknown area, turned into a trap in the Idrang Valley. What I find very saddening, in a sense, in my readings about that battle, was that even the commander, Lieutenant Colonel, later Lieutenant General Hal Moore, who was the head of that battalion there, they knew they were being sent into that area, into that valley, because they knew the enemy was around there. But when interviewed many times after, Hal Moore acknowledged he had no idea how many enemy soldiers were in that area. And as it turned out, they were outnumbered 10 to 1, which to me, the lesson is, it's just an example of tremendously bad judgment by those higher in the chain of command that would send, 18, 19, 20-year-old, 20, young soldiers, inexperienced soldiers for the most part. Yes, there are a few experienced ones, like Rick Rescorla, but for the most part, these were green troops without combat experience, and they're landing in Huey helicopters in a relatively small landing zone that would only take about 8 helicopters at a time. So they were bringing in, dropping in literally just dozens of troops while more helicopters would bring in more. And meanwhile, they're being watched by at least 1,600 enemy soldiers watching this, laying in wait for them, who also had the high ground of the surrounding mountainside. So it was really a tremendously difficult situation, but the Rick Rescorla was one of the heroes of that battle that saved lives of his soldiers. And that wasn't the end of it, because even after the first day of that battle, and some troops were being taken out, other troops were coming in, that second group, who were being told to march a couple miles to this other landing zone, Albany landing zone, they were ambushed and almost wiped out. And Rick Rescorla's group was then sent in to essentially rescue them again. So, again, he exhibited leadership and courage and just the personal qualities which saved people's lives, made the best of a situation that he had not in any way created. And I thought it is interesting that it was his a copy of a photograph of Rick Rescorla in combat, holding a rifle with a bayonet affixed to it, just looking really haggard, looking, you know, like, you know, he was in the middle of a really tough battle, that ended on the cover of Hal Moore's book and Joe Galloway's book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young. So check that out if you get a chance. So those are just comments that I wanted to offer. And again, I hope our listeners have enjoyed this evening's tribute to a great American hero, Rick Rescorla, who served his country in Vietnam and then also saved the lives of about 2,700 people at the World Trade Center on September the 11th before losing his life himself when the South Tower collapsed. So with that, let's go back over to Richard Hurley.
Well, I guess we're getting close to ending the show here tonight. I want to again thank David for putting together that tribute on Rick Rescorla. We need more stories like this one, and I'm sure there are a lot of heroes out there. We certainly have a lot of heroes going around today with this coronavirus as well. So we need to kind of highlight these people who clearly made a difference in their lifetime, helping other people, so that other people maybe could move on and live out their life. So hopefully in the next 6 months or so, we can put together some more stories for our listeners. I want to remind everybody that one of our programs that we like to talk about is the Coaching and the Care program. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to remind listeners, as we know, there are many veterans who are committing suicide on a daily basis, or they're in a crisis of any kind, on a daily basis. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has the crisis line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
It's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank each of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Early Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you stay safe and stay healthy. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.